Hello, Internet. There are many places where you could get your running news, and there are many places you can get your podcasts. We're happy you chose this one.
I'm Chris Chavez.
I'm Alex Lohr.
And I'm Mitch Kastoff.
And you're listening to the Running Our Mouths podcast.
And Bannister has done it. Though he's out on his feet, his coach and team manager tell him he's achieved his ambition. The mile in 3 minutes, 59.4 seconds.
Prefontaine of the United States. Let's keep an eye and see what he does in the early going.
And could this be Ovid's first defeat? Ovid's in trouble. And so gets the revenge he wants.
Beardley is making a move. It has come down to this. Beardley and Salazar. The motorcycle's got to get out of the way. Here comes Beardley. He's got to make a move on Salazar.
Watch the clock. It's goal for both. And again, he's done it again. A new world record for Usain Bolt. They say
welcome back to another episode of the Running Our Mouths podcast. Chris Chavez here with a sore throat in the middle of a blizzard in Wisconsin with Alex Lohr and Mitch Kastoff enjoying, I think, better weather out in Portland. Real quick show today, since we all want to get to our own Super Bowl festivities. On today's show, we're going to run down this weekend's champions from the UW meet in Washington, the Armory Track Invitational, and maybe some other results that got overlooked. We'll debate whether we're for the new DMR world record and assembling teams. We'll give our quick take on the Boston Marathon Shoveler, and then discuss the upcoming Born to Run movie with Matthew McConaughey. So guys, I mean, Alex was out at UW, so we'll start off with him. A lot of people deserve props. So the way we're going to work it for this week's show, we'll each name a champion on the men's side and the women's side just to run through all the action. Alex, who were the men and women that really stood out to you out at UW?
Yeah, I got to announce some of the races out there, and I think the big storyline going into it was the Bowerman men were all working out and kind of dabbling in some off distances here and there. A couple of 800, they did the distance medley the night before, and then they most of them came back and doubled the next day. I think the most impressive time overall, when you look at it on paper, you're going to see 3:56 from Ryan Hill. That was pretty good. But I think across the board, the guys that ran in that mile can all come away with it with you know, confirming that they're in the shape that they need to be at this time of the year. Hill, Weeding, Farrell, Bayer, all had solid times in that mile. So they, you know, confirm that they're at least healthy and things are looking up for the season. But somebody that just snuck onto the radar at the Husky meet, and I poured over him as much as I could, was a kid named Matthew Clowes. Now, Mr. Matthew Clowes was fifth in the mile with all the big dogs, Ryan Hill and Weeding and Farrell. The kid is NAIA. He ran 3:58. He was fifth in the race. He ran 3:58, which is crazy, like crazy for an NAIA kid, and probably the greatest moment of this kid's life. And he was like slugging it out with the big dogs. But then he came back like a half an hour later and wins the second fastest heat of the 800 and goes 1:51. Now, he's not going to get a lot of love because he's an NAIA guy, but give it up. I mean, Concordia, Matthew Clowes, look out for this kid. And then on the women's side, you know, not a lot of huge stars jumped into the Husky meet this weekend. I think the thing I noticed the most was that Metcalf's kind of young talent is starting to come back well for the Huskies. You know, we saw, you know, Bailey Myers and some of those girls running really well. Alexi Pappas had a decent day, but I'm going to give my champion to the young Washington girls who are back what they used to look like a couple years ago.
Weeding looked healthy, which is something I'm kind of excited for. I mean, this summer we saw Leo become a 3:30 guy, and we like to debate around the office back in the day whether if you run 3:30 once, are you actually a 3:30 guy? You know, I'd be really excited to see if Weeding can find his form again. Between those two, I'd say Leo's probably, I think, closer to running that again, but it would be nice to see Weeding probably try and contend for one of those three spots for the 1500 headed to Beijing. It's going to be really competitive, and I don't know. If based on that race and the way everyone's looking, I'd still say he's just on the cusp of locking in a spot. Mitch, you watched the Army Track Invitational. I think it looked like you had a viewing party. Who are your two champions?
Yeah, I'll say this, viewing parties, they're all the rage right now. Get some friends together, get some beer, get some food, and yell at your TV as people run marginally fast on 200-meter track. It's great. But I got to start off with a guy who, a renaissance. I know it's the obvious pick, but I haven't seen him dominate not just one race, but two races like this since his college days. And I had, you know, such high hopes for him. And he's kind of gone off to a rocky start. But Cam M.F. Levins, you are on a higher plane of existence right now. Your races weren't just sick. They were on life support. You kicked down. You pulled away. Huge negative split. Chris O'Hare, a very good miler on the Armory track. And then you come back 30 minutes later. And it's funny because we are debating that heads up, if it was Rupp or Levins fresh, I would guarantee 100% of people, well, let's go 99%, would pick Rupp. And so to have Cam like on a handicap after running a mile, which was also almost a national record, and have him just, I haven't seen him just use those arms in that kind of fashion where you know he's just going to decimate everyone. And so Cam, you know, I'm excited to see what's going to come from all this speed and strength from you.
Would Ben Blankenship be kind of right behind him in terms of your rankings for a champion? Because he looks healthy, which is something we haven't seen in a while from him.
He's a guy where I've always appreciated his hair a lot. He used to have this incredible mullet going on. And yeah, it's him and it's funny because him and Kieran Leary, they train together, and they're both guys where, in the same vein, if they can just stay healthy, don't even try to get to the track 100%. If they can get to the track on 85%, they're going to be pretty nasty. So it's good to see Ben out there, you know, slugging it up with the big names like he should. On my women's, it's a girl that I don't know how she doesn't get any, like, the appraise she gets isn't even close to the percentage that she should be getting. Still 20-year-old, Aji Wilson. Okay, I know she won, and she usually does, and she won in the fashion she does. She takes the lead, and she holds the rail, and she kind of just, she never looks like she's struggling, and she just always kind of maintains her win, and you can tell everyone's struggling behind her, but yeah, ice in her veins. But the girl is a world youth champion. She's a world junior champion. She was sixth at Worlds in 2013, and she's run 157, and there is never any hype. There's never any narrative built around her. And I don't know what it is, but I know Nick Willis tweeted this, and I'm going to send some like Adidas love right there. But yeah, she deserves a lot of spotlight to be put on her.
In that same race, actually, Trenier dropped a personal best. I don't know how often she runs the 800, but I think she might have been like a 206 girl. Now she ran 201, so that was good to see from Trenier. Just kind of looking past each winner in both these races with the Ben Blankenship and then the Trenier note. But Al, you definitely got something to add here.
Well, yeah, I just more praise for Ajay. Just real quick, and she again, 20 years old, and she ran 157 last year. I mean, she was the fastest woman at the distance last year, the fastest. She may not have ended up being ranked number one because she had a long season, started to fall off towards the end of the year, but man, 157 last year, sky's the limit for her, and you will see her featured in a publication, a print publication soon. I can't tell you which one. How about that?
All right. That's fair enough. I'll go with champions from outside of those two meets, just because there was action going around elsewhere. I'll go to the JDL Fast Track, where Shannon Roberry runs 4:22.66 for the indoor mile. I haven't seen the track, but apparently it's flat, right, guys?
It's definitely flat.
You guys know?
It's definitely flat.
Statman John Mulkeen actually tweeted that that's the equivalent to 3:50 in the men's mile, which only one American has done. The fastest miler couple, her and Pablo Solares. And the way Mary Kane is looking right now, not that she's looking bad because maybe it's, you know, it was a rust buster and everything, but I'd say Sharon's going to be unstoppable in that Milrose mile. And then, you know, we'll see how that outdoor fitness carries, the fitness carries over into outdoor season. Jenny Simpson might have to look out. I mean, we saw them both shoulder to shoulder last year. Shannon Robery's looking smooth right now. On the men's side, you got to go heavy in the game. Zane Robertson, 59-47, the fourth non-African to break 60. That's a faster half marathon debut than Galen Rupp. And of those four guys that have broken it, one of them was on a downhill course. These stats all coming from Ken Nakamura, who does a great job of compiling stuff. Zane Robertson, what? I mean, well, obviously now the discussion is going to be when would we see him run the marathon? I mean, that's just kind of like the natural talks that after someone drops these times. I mean, it's what happened with Diego Estrada. But, I mean, this happened in Japan, and it happened after all the track meets, so I think it might go overlooked. Definitely wanted to show some love to Zane Robertson. He's out there training in Kenya, still working his behind off. Zane Robertson, I'd be excited for a marathon debut from him at some point. Maybe, I mean, with international runners like that, they do kind of have the opportunity, I think, to try and run at least at the Beijing World Championships, because no American is touching the Beijing Championship marathon with a 10-foot pole if they want to try and run something fast next February or in the fall. I mean, it's going to get to that point where it gets conservative. But Zane Robertson is my champion for the weekend. You guys have anything to add?
I'll say this. I definitely respect those guys a lot. Yeah. They might come off a little bit brash in some of their interviews, but you got to give it up to them. I mean, they've put in the work. Interesting point you made about, you know, running hard at world champs, the marathon world champs. That's an interesting timeline. And I was actually having the conversation with Ed Eystone about it this weekend because we were talking about Mr. Jared Ward. And I don't know if you guys noticed, but you know, his teammate who ended up winning the 5K, Jared Ward paced him until the final like 600 meters or so, and Jared Ward actually holds the BYU indoor 5K record, and with 600 meters to go, he stopped pacing his teammate, and his teammate missed his Jared Ward's record by like tenths of a second or something like that. So we were giving him a hard time, saying like he just didn't want his teammate to break it. But we're talking about the timeline there. Like, if you run world champs, can you run solidly at Olympic trials? And then, you know, is that enough time, enough turnaround time? If they're going to keep the LA Marathon at the same time next year that they're having it right now, I think it's plenty of time.
It's going to be
in
February.
They are moving it up.
It's going to be in February.
Oof.
Yep.
Yeah. I got to think it's too close. I agree. It's too close. You can't do all three.
Now we're going to take a few steps back. We're going to go back to Mitch's, the meet that he was talking about. The DMR world record went down at the Army Track Invitational, previously held by the Texas Longhorns. Now we've got to debate this. How do you guys feel about assembling these all-star teams to take down these world records? And first of all, the word world record is used loosely here just because it's not run as often. Assembling teams versus having an actual team. Are you for or against it? We'll go with Mitch first.
I guess just out of the nature of the sport, I am okay with assembling teams just because then the alternative is, you know, we're limited to just college or the obscure world relays, which is going to be very difficult to run indoors considering that it's in May and in the Bahamas. But I don't want to take away the two letters of WR next to a time in someone's name, so I'm not. But that being said, it's, you know, saying it's a world record is kind of a stretch. That being said, the time and the team they assembled were pretty all-starish, and so I did enjoy that.
My take on it is I loved the World Relay like championships last year in Bahamas. I thought they were incredible. Were they like, was every team as good as it could possibly be? No. So I think we need to like make a decisive decision here. Hey, when we go for these relay records, we're going to put our best foot forward and not make it just kind of this, you know, exhibitionist type movement. Like, I want to see the best of the best assembled at the right time, all together in the same race. I want to see the best Kenyans versus the best Americans. So I'm for it. Let's do it. That being said, the joy that they get, I'm sure there's a monetary joy that they might get in, based into their contract. That's a little bit of a driver there. But the joy that the Texas guys got at being college guys working together every day and shocking themselves and getting that world record time, that won't be overshadowed. I mean, there's a plaque in Kyle Miller's house I saw for years, and it was just, they had photos and a collage of the race, and they will never be able to eclipse that moment that the collegiate guys were able to have.
I think to actually get that, what you mentioned was having those top-tier athletes in this race, I think you got to add an Olympic medal in there. I mean, it'd be tough with the scheduling and all that, but I mean, to see a DMR at the Olympics, I think it'd be awesome, not only just for the advancement of the DMR and for you know, the level of talent that goes in there. I don't know. I mean, yeah, it's the same thing with Mitch. It's a world, you know, you don't want to diminish a world record after someone said it, but yeah, same thing. I feel like there's a lot more emotion that goes into actually being teammates with and working hard every day with the people that you set this record with. So, you know, I think if we look at the placing, they didn't go under. I don't know if they did. They went under the old mark. But I would give it to someone like the New Jersey New York Track Club. These guys work together every day. So, I don't know. I kind of have like the feel that the teammate aspect and like the camaraderie, that plays a role into it to really call themselves like a team. But, I mean, it's a relay is a relay. You assemble four people. Yeah, so I think I'll go with for, you know, how, you know, amped up people got over this. It's good. We spoke with Eric Sawinski earlier today. He's actually trying to get out of New York City right now. Bad weather has delayed his flight plans, but we caught up with him for 5 minutes. So take a listen to Eric Sawinski talking about fitness during indoor season and his successes and how he's trying to get it to translate to outdoor season in this quick interview with the Running Our Mouths podcast.
What's it like to be a part of two world record-setting relay races in two straight years?
You know, I don't think the second one has completely hit me yet. It's exciting, and anytime we get to say we're going for world record, it definitely adds a little more excitement to the table. And just, you know, always being on the East Coast, such intimate atmospheres, extremely knowledgeable track fans, just makes it that much more special. So I think we were all pretty pumped yesterday. So I believe it's 3 years in a row now where it's American record, then world record, and now world record, right?
Yep, yeah.
So what do you credit this indoor track success to?
I think that, you know, I was always pretty strong indoors in college. I'm really comfortable with it. You know, I'm not a huge guy by any means. That definitely plays a little bit into it. The turns are a little bit easier for me. And we're just more so using the stepping stone and trying to, you know, turn it over to have a more successful outdoor season than we have the last couple of years. I think next year or last year outdoors was a good opener. I'm out back and things kind of faded a little bit from there, but I think that we're going in the right direction, just trying to keep the train rolling.
Now, Alex and I always talk about this, but how hard is it to get winter fitness to translate into outdoor fitness and, you know, outdoor success? Because we see a lot of people thrive during indoor season, but then can't really put it together at the right time during outdoor season.
Yeah, you know, I think that it's kind of a puzzle we're still trying to put together. I mean, outdoors the last couple of years has definitely been frustrating. Last year, not as much as the year before. You know, just trying some different stuff in training and indoor season this year. I mean, it doesn't matter as much. Last year is something we were keying on. They really wanted to make that my first world team indoors. So we're just doing a lot of base work, definitely did some hard stuff on the track to get ready for this DMR attempt. That's probably one of the highlights for indoor season for me. So just kind of grinding it out and just trying to figure out what's going to work for me. So we're still playing with it, and hopefully we'll figure it out this year.
Now, for 2013, for Moscow, that was kind of a year where you were coming off your first breakthrough. So it was kind of your first season as a true pro. Then last year was an off year for outdoor. Now this year, we've got the World Championships in Beijing. What do you kind of do to scale back on overworking yourself in the winter to ensure that you're kind of peaking in the spring? Because I guess this is your first real go-around as, like, at full professional form to get ready for Outdoor World Championship.
Yeah, you know, I mean, 2013 was something I kind of had to run fast indoors, being unsponsored, and, you know, I was working a lot. It just wasn't something I was going to be able to correlate to fast times unless they were able to get some financial assistance. So, you know, we had to run fast indoors and try to get noticed, and that ended up working out. And then last year, I mean, with it being a world indoor year, no world outdoors, no Olympics or anything, just wanted to run fast then, and that worked out too. So we just kind of tweaked some things this year. I did a little bit longer of a base phase in the fall because I was racing all the way through the middle of September. So just kind of trying to push that end and still develop the speed at the same time. I think that I've always been really, really comfortable with the race pace stuff. I mean, a race pace 200s, 400s, that stuff's always really, really easy to me, but it's the stuff on the end, like the longer tempo runs or even shorter 60 meters. I think that if we can expand on those two ends, it'll make me be able to run that like race pace longer. So it's just kind of something we're focused on right now.
What's your current training situation like? Because I know you as this solo grinder out in Iowa. Is that still the case?
Yeah, you know, still solo grinding it out. The winter's been a lot better this year than last year. We haven't had too many days where it's terribly cold outside. So just grinding out there. I did a camp with Chris Wilinski a couple weeks ago at Wisconsin Parkside, and kind of took his philosophy that if it's going to be more than minus 20 with the wind chill, then I'll stay inside. Other than that, it's just outside trying to get the miles and the workouts in. So.
Now, last question I've got is, the World Relays are happening again, and I think they might add a DMR. How much do you think this gets you excited for potentially doing this all over again? This time we see the Kenyan team a little bit more stacked with guys like Asbel Kiprop who run out the...
Oh, you know, I think it makes you want to bring a lot more to the table. I mean, we saw what we were capable of indoors, and I think that, you know, the U.S. could put together even a way faster team outdoors. And, you know, Kenya will come with their big guns. They've even got, you know, some other countries that will come in, Ethiopia, some others that will put together solid DMRs. And anytime you get to run for your country, you take a lot more pride in that. So hopefully that, you know, I'll be able to represent the U.S. again in that.
So you heard Eric Sawinski there. He's trying to get out of snow. Let's talk more about snow. Earlier in the week, Boston Marathon finish line is uncovered by a mystery snow shoveler. I was actually toying with the idea of having this week's podcast be a serial parody of the Boston Marathon finish line shoveler, but we'll save that for another time. Quick take between me and Mitch. We'll debate this. Boston Marathon shoveler, I mean, he's a hero for a day. And the word heroes, you know, kind of a powerful word, but it was cool to see. Then, you know, in these interviews, he talks about running the Boston Marathon, and I was actually, you know, I got the call from ESPN to kind of research this guy and find some stuff out about him. So I was going through the results of the Boston Marathon over the last couple of years. Couldn't find him. I only found a Chris Laudini for 2011. But then in the interviews, he said he's run it a few times. Turns out he was a bandit. So we have that part of his history. Mitch, what are your thoughts on Chris Laudini as the Boston Marathon shoveler? Hero, or is there a part of you that's a little skeptical of him?
Stop. Stop using that word. Stop using the word hero. Like, Chris, you're a great dude, and you did something pretty cool. But for the word hero to be associated with this man and his actions is a little ridiculous. Everyone stop. Obama needs to call a press conference on this. Please do not. I mean, he did something cool. It's not like he had a camera crew out here, you know, watching him do it. And I think the idea of social media kind of, I hate to say social media, the idea of social media kind of amplified his actions, just because he's a mystery guy and people try and solve it out, and then they found him, and then they're, you know, people, obviously with Boston, or even marathons, well, I guess Boston specifically, but yes, emotions are very high surrounding that race, and yeah, he's just a cool dude. I guess it doesn't fly with headlines, though.
Yeah, I'll go with, I think it was a great action. It was nice to see him, you know, get out there. But I think we're all overlooking the fact that I think there was another shoveler that we still don't know who it is. So we kind of gave up on the hunt for that one, because I mean there's pictures of someone else shoveling out there with him. So there's that. And then I don't know. It did. The story did get a little out of hand, especially when I had to get a comment from Meb. And I think it's getting even crazier when the fact that they're citing this Boston Marathon shoveler case in the Boston Bomber trial. They're like, yeah, you know, we can't have the trial here because, you know, as the statement said by the BAA, it's like everyone owns the marathon in Boston. So they're trying to get the trial moved somewhere else. I think it's getting a little too ridiculous, but, you know, it was cool. It was good to see. So there's that. That came out over this week. So the Boston Marathon did get a little bit of attention this week. So that's actually our marathon talk for the week, surprisingly. Let's bring it back to more running stuff. Another cool news that we got, and we'll close out the show with this, is Born to Run is going to be a movie. And we talked about this actually in the very first episode. What's the next running book that's going to be turned into a movie? Turns out there's going to be an ESPN series on the sports gene and like all this like human, you know, super athletes. Born to Run's the next one. And what are you guys looking forward to seeing Matthew McConaughey in this film? For me personally, it's him hearing him say Tarahumara in his accent is going to be beautiful.
Okay, so Born to Run. I've read Born to Run, and it was a great book with a great story that I felt like could have just remained the story. And I wonder how they're going to take, you know, how they're going to adapt it to the movie, because I felt like the book was kind of too. There was two things coming into the book while you read it. It was this cool story about the Tarahumara, and you know this really cool, you know, trail ultra kind of community, and this crazy journey where they go down to Mexico and they try to find Caballo Blanco, and that part of it was so cool and so fun. But then there was like this other element to it, you know, where you know they talk about the barefoot running, and I felt that like took away from the story a little bit too much. And I wish they would have just stuck to that. I would have read, you know, books completely separately on the two topics. So I wonder how they're going to adapt it. I hope they just stick to the Tarahumara and Caballo Blanco story, because that is a really great story. And I wonder if Matthew's going to be as thin as he was for Dallas Buyers Club.
As long as Vibrams stay dead forever and don't rise up from a shallow grave, I'm fine with the movie. If it has any impact on footwear, then I will break my vow to forever love Matthew McConaughey, and I will be very upset. And I will dedicate the rest of my life to making sure that those shoes are no longer on any human being's foot.
Wow, it's pretty powerful there.
What would you rather see? What would you rather see on somebody's foot, Mitch? Crocs or Vibrams?
Are they wearing socks with the Crocs?
Yes.
I'd probably just kill myself.
All right. What I'm looking forward to in the movie, as I said, was McConaughey saying Tarahumara over and over again. You know, if you look at the Wikipedia page for Born to Run, at the very end, there's a sentence that says that Jake Gyllenhaal was probably going to be cast in the film. So I'm actually interested to see if they are going to follow up on that, because I think Gyllenhaal could play Scott Jurek. All he needs to do is grow out his hair a little bit. Apparently, Scott Jurek's also very tall. I actually don't know how tall Jake Gyllenhaal is. And then I've seen pictures of Caballo Blanco. Just as I was reading the book, I was like curious. So I'd like, and he's actually, there's actually a separate movie coming out about Caballo Blanco, and just strictly his story. So that'll be really cool. Then there's also a movie that actually someone sent me this week of the Tarahumara and like their culture. So I was, the food that they eat and all that. That was an awesome part of the book. But Caballo Blanco in the film, it's weird to say it. I saw Woody Harrelson when I looked at the picture just this morning to kind of prep for this. I said Woody Harrelson as Caballo Blanco would be perfect. And then in addition to that, what you get is you get all the True Detective fans who love McConaughey and Harrelson to flock to the movie theaters to see them again. I think it's brilliant, and I think they should do it. I don't know who the director is going to be, but we'll. I mean,
Quentin Tarantino.
Oh, it's M. Night Shyamalan's Born to Run would be awesome.
Oh, God, no.
But there you have it. We covered Born to Run, Boston Marathon Shoveler, DMR, and then Track Champions for the Week. It was, I actually didn't think there was going to be a lot going on, but next week we got Mayo to look forward to. I'll be out in South Bend for that one. And and then 2 weeks from now is Milrose Games. So, once again.
Don't forget about USA Cross next week.
Oh, that's right.
USA Cross Country Championships are in Boulder next week.
You going to that one?
That one? I will be there. All the cool kids are gone. All
right. All right. Well, thanks a lot for listening to yet another episode of the Running Our Mouths podcast. We'll catch you next week for some cross country and trek talk.